You forgot the remote. Guess you're watching whatever's on? Or you can call Joint Relief Institute. Fast, safe, FDA-approved pain relief. 708-888-0000.
Good morning, Steve Dales, Pet World on WGN. Her name is Dr. Nancy Kay, and her book, A Dog Named 647. Sometimes self-discovery begins with a leap of faith and a runaway dog. Good morning, Dr. Kay.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Now, you're an internal medicine specialist, and I wouldn't have, you know, I could see you're writing a book about doing that surgery and how you conduct that surgery to veterinary professionals. I mean, what motivated you to write a book that is primarily for young teenagers? I'm guessing that audience is, but you'd have to tell me.
I wrote it to get attention from middle grade readers, so ages about 8 to 12. A soapbox issue of mine for years has been puppy mills. Puppy mills where profit is prioritized over the well-being, both physical and psychological well-being of the dogs. I've seen so many puppies, dogs from puppy mills that just terrible disasters because, again, the breeding is horrific. So I've grown weary of the lack of progress our generation has made in terms of getting rid of puppy mills. I was very inspired by Greta Thunberg and her activism, climate activism, and I thought, you know, maybe I need to take this issue to the kids. And middle graders are just starting to become really aware of the world around them and thinking about social welfare issues. So that's why I wrote a middle grade book. I wrote fiction because I tried nonfiction, which is really what I've written in the past. And there's just no way a middle grader would want to read a nonfiction book about puppy mills.
Yeah, I get that. Now, I want to start here. The dog named 647. I mean, the dog's name is 647. I thought when
Correct.
I first got the book, okay, this is an area code that she's, you know. So my question is, why didn't you name the dog Snoopy or Rover or Ralph or Max or whatever?
647, once she has a home, ultimately becomes Scout after Scout sends him to kill a mockingbird. But during her life spent in a puppy mill producing puppies, she was the number 657th dog. So her name truly was just 647. I might have said 657, 647 while she lived in the puppy mill.
And who is Mia? And tell me her story. And is she based on a client you knew? Maybe someone you know even better than that? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Mia is, I just love her. She's a 12-year-old disgruntled kid. She has a single mom. Her dad lives three states away with his new family. She struggles in school. The one thing she has going for her is her best friend, Cassie. And more than anything in life, she wants a dog, but her mom is terrified of dogs. And she has a chance encounter with 647, a pregnant golden retriever who's then dragged away by someone from the puppy mill. And Mia sets out on sort of a Nancy Drew adventure, searching for this dog. And in the process recognizes that, oh, this is a puppy mill with over 200 dogs. And then her goal becomes to rescue them all.
Have you based this story on any of your experiences? I mean, you mentioned when you're just tired of clients coming in with these dogs, and what you didn't say, but I presume you'd agree, are more likely to have medical and behavioral issues. There's lots of data to demonstrate that's true. What people might not realize, though, is those puppy mill dogs are often dogs that are delivered to pet stores or other places. So I want to talk about that in a moment, but I'm asking too many questions at once, so let me get back to what I asked you in the first place. I'm sorry.
Which I didn't answer. I think that Mia's character, there's some overlap between Mia and myself.
Oh, so you are...
A wee bit autobiographical.
So this is what you were like when you were 12.
Well, yeah, I was pretty stubborn and persistent and resilient. And that's Mia.
And these dogs have to be resilient, too, but they do suffer. So for people who don't know, I want to talk a little about Puppy Mills and Puppy Mill dogs. First of all, Puppy Mills, they still exist in America. People think somehow they've gone away, and they haven't. And what I mentioned earlier about where pet stores get their dogs from, can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. About 95% of the puppies sold in pet stores come from Puppy Mills. The puppies are sold to a distributor or a middleman, so to speak, and they're transported across the country in vans when they're only 6 to 8 weeks of age. Many of them don't survive the trip. I'm not talking about dogs adopted at pet stores in combination with an animal shelter. I'm talking about the puppies behind the glass windows. And so they come, they're scared, they're often sick. And unfortunately, and it's often an impulse buy, people are willing to shell out $3,000 or more for a puppy.
And what's more, that that doodle dog, so the dog is that's supposed to be a, I don't know, or a Yorkie poo. So the dog, that genetic tests have been done, and it turns out that dog might be part Yorkie, but has no poo. I mean, they're also selling these dogs for something that it may not be, which is actually consumer fraud on top of everything else. And there's one more factor. They are expensive, and sometimes these dogs might be, I don't know, you know, depending on where you live and the dog you purchase, might be anywhere from a couple of $1,000 to upwards of $10,000. So people, or more. And people can't afford that. So they said, okay, we'll take care of you. We have a credit program. And those those finance programs actually often charge far more interest than what the going rate is to finance your house or your car or anything else. And there, go ahead, talk about that.
I was going to say something else I think your listeners should know is that the puppies that you see online, if you Google puppies for sale, it'll take you to these websites that are just facades for Puppy Mills. It'll show dogs living inside, on couches, interacting with children on green grass, and they are purely Puppy Mills. And one way you can know is that you can't go visit the litter. You can't meet the mother because the puppy miller has too much to hide from you.
Absolutely.
In fact, after you purchase the dog, they will meet you halfway. So you don't have to be bothered to drive so far. Or they'll put the puppy on an airplane unsupervised and you get the pup. You pick your puppy up at the airport.
And I want to talk more about identifying Puppy Mills because they try not to be identified. And more about the book, A Dog Named 647 with Dr. Nancy Kaye, when we come back on WGN. Dr. Nancy Kaye is the author of a book called A Dog Named 647. And one reason, I mean, this book is for middle-aged kids, but, you know, Dr. Kaye, one reason why I love this book so much, and it resonates with me. As listeners of this radio show know, I've been very involved in getting in Chicago and the state of Illinois a law passed where no dogs or cats can be sold at pet stores, and have participated elsewhere in the country for the same. And I'm apparently somewhat known for that, and that's a good thing. However, that's not where it ends. And one explanation we were given by those who fought against what we were trying to do is that, oh, people are just going to go online and do it anyway. Well, my argument was, well, still doesn't make it right that they're sold at pet stores. And at pet stores, they develop behavior issues very often. There's data to show that. And there's not necessarily appropriate veterinary care. So I don't want them there. However, they do have somewhat of a point here because you can go online and you can It looks beautiful. The website, anyone can make a beautiful website, right?
And absolutely.
And you were talking about how to identify that they're puppy mills. The American Kennel Club has been the number one, I would say monetarily, they are the number one obstacle for these laws. The laws being no dogs, cats, often also no rabbits, being sold to pet stores. The American Kennel Club is oddly on the other side of this. And in their own book, they actually say what they're not saying when they're testifying. What they say in their own book is you've got to visit the facility. And I'm making up this wording. It's my paraphrasing, but it's about right. If you feel that you can't have dinner there, that's a warning sign. If you get that feeling in your stomach that things aren't right, listen to your gut. And all of that, they're right about all that, but they're contradicting themselves when they say, oh, but pet stores are fine. You know, that's where you can get a dog or a cat, buy a dog or a cat. I'm not talking, and you're not talking about shelters that adopt a pet stores. That's a completely different story. But it is a concern what's happening online as the pets, as these puppy mills still, for the most part, are thriving.
And your point about the AKC, the American Kennel Club, a lot of these, most of these puppies coming out of puppy mills are AKC registered. They're registered with the AKC. And when consumers see that, they think, oh, it must be a quality dog. Well, the AKC loves gathering all of the money to register all of these individual dogs. So if they were against puppy mills, truly against puppy mills, and made an effort to squash them, they would be out a whole lot of money. So don't be fooled by the fact that a dog is AKC registered.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, of course. At the end of the book, is there an action? So you've got your 10, 11, 12-year-old who's reading this book. At the end, you said earlier you want kids to take. What action can they take?
There's a lot of different actions. One is if you have pet stores that sell puppies in your community, you can join a demonstration, a peaceful demonstration outside of the pet store. If you have the gumption, you can initiate a little protest so that you have signs for people going into the pet store, come ask me about where these puppies come from. I think this is a really good idea, and it's great educationally for the kid, is to write letters to the legislators. Depending on who is in charge of this, might be council people, might be the mayor, might even be up into the Senate or House of Representatives. So that's a way to take action. You can volunteer for organizations that work to rescue dogs from puppy mills. That's another way. And educating your friends, telling other adults, getting copies of a book like A Dog Named 647 into your school library. Start a club at your school that works to get rid of puppy mills or tries to make pet stores selling puppies obsolete.
All right, Dr. K, you are no longer Dr. Nancy K. You are now Mia. I mean, you said that you're kind of like Mia. So let's say you're I want you to play a character. You're Mia. I think Mia was 12 years old. So you're a 12. You're a 12-year-old girl. What do you have as a 12-year-old girl to tell our listeners about having a dog in your life, but being careful about where you get that dog?
Never ever buy a puppy from a pet store, and never ever buy a puppy sight and sight unseen. By that I mean having not seen the kennel sight unseen and having not met the litter and the mother of the litter. That's not seeing them. So sight and sight unseen. It's pretty simple, but if one follows that rule of thumb, you won't end up with a puppy mill dog.
You know, I founded an organization that since has been pretty much disbanded because it was really about Chicago and Illinois, and now dogs and cats cannot be sold at pet stores in Illinois or in Chicago.
Hooray.
But it was called Veterinary Professionals Against Puppy Mills because we wanted to give veterinarians an outlet to speak out. Is this also kind of an outlet for you to do just that? And by the way, I won't mind if you take our name and do the same thing on a national basis. I would love to be a part of it.
Sure. And likewise, I'm happy to support whatever you're doing. To be honest, Steve, I feel like there's not nearly enough veterinarians speaking out about this. I belong to Humane Veterinary Alliance, which is an alliance of veterinarians that are acting in favor of humane animal welfare. And they're just, the numbers of veterinarians are way too small, way too small. So this goes beyond puppy mills. It's any version of factory farming. And puppy mills are one version of factory farming. There just aren't enough veterinarians, in my opinion, speaking out on this. And that's discouraging to me.
Well, the encouraging part is that you are speaking out. The name of the book is called A Dog Named 647. Sometimes self-discovery begins with a leap of faith and a runaway dog. Dr. Nancy Kaye, thank you so much for joining us on WGN. And most importantly, thank you for speaking out. You're doing it, saying that, yes, we don't need to have dogs in puppy mills. That's an understatement. Right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good day.
Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Good morning. And Mark Ayers is still around. Mark Ayers from the Humane World for Animals, formerly known as the Humane Society of the United States, is the Illinois State Director. And Mark, I guess I don't talk to you as much as I'd like to, only because you are so incredibly busy. And this first topic is something I'm excited about. All these things we'll be talking about. But this first topic has been, it's you know, when you travel by car and you see these roadside zoos, they may come to an end. And also traveling animal acts. Tell me about that. And I'm hopeful that the governor, and I'm optimistic, as I suspect you are, that the governor will sign this. How can he not?
So good to be here, Steve. Thanks again for having me on the show. Yeah, we're so excited about this. And for you and your listeners that might remember, it's been a decade. Can you believe it? A decade since Illinois was the first state in the country to ban the use of elephants and circuses and traveling shows. And for the last 9 years, we've been working ever since to add additional species to the existing law, specifically big cats, primates, and bears, and trying to prohibit them in circuses and traveling shows. And we finally did it, Steve. The bill passed both chambers with super majorities in the House and Senate. It is currently sitting on the governor's desk for consideration. And we feel more than optimistic about the governor signing it. It had so much support from accredited zoos and sanctuaries and animal welfare organizations. We just feel like it's a no-brainer, and we feel really good that the governor will sign it. But it's been many years in the making to get this bill finally to Governor Pritzker's desk.
You know, I'm confused about one thing, because the Big Cat Animal Act, which is a federal bill that, in fact, Representative Mike Quigley, U.S. Representative, has been on the show talking about, that passed. So doesn't that cover the big cat part of all this?
It covered the big cat part of it, Steve, but it mainly was addressing public contact and then the breeding that goes on with the big cats. It didn't address the use of the big cats in traveling animal acts. And so we actually saw the last several years several exhibitors touring Illinois and the Midwest, and in fact, the continental United States, still using big cats in their traveling animal acts. And one of those circuses toured 25 different cities in 2025 alone. And it caused such an uproar in 2025 in those cities. And those folks contacted us and continued complaining about the inhumane treatment of what they were seeing with those big cats. And we thought, we have to get this bill across the finish line. There's no more excuses. We have their records. their USDA violations are what they are. You can see it on public databases how awful some of these exhibitors are. And the legislature finally agreed this year, no more. They took a stand and said, we are done having these events in our districts. We don't want them in our state. Illinois is a humane state for animals. And I think that's why we saw it passing with super majorities in both chambers, which is just incredible.
Yeah, these days, that is incredible. But I want to make a point of one thing, that even accredited zoos, and I know the Lincoln Park Zoo specifically has been very active in wanting to get this passed. So those who know animals best, such as the zoos, are saying they're doing it all wrong. And this is actually harmful to those animals. And also some of them are endangered species, and they should be falling under the Endangered Species Act and controlled breeding, which happens with accredited zoos. It doesn't happen with these organizations.
That's correct. And we are proud to have the AZA support from those two zoos, Brookfield and Lincoln Park Zoo. They are some of the best scientific experts when it comes to this area. And they were here testifying with us on the bill, sitting next to Representative Kelly Cassidy and Senator Linda Holmes, providing their expert testimony on behalf of the bill. I mean, it protected animal welfare, it protects public safety, and I think more importantly, it reflected public opinion, because what we've seen in Illinois and the Midwest, and in fact the entire country, is that increasingly the public doesn't want to see elephants and big cats and bears and primates being shackled and chained and carted around the country for human exploitation and entertainment purposes. They didn't want to see any more of this, and they've been contacting their local representatives and state representatives. And I think that showed up in a big way in Illinois with that passing 51-4 in the Senate. I mean, just 4 no votes is just incredible on something this big and historic in Illinois. So we were proud to have the AZA zoos of support with this, but I think it just again showed that the public perception has shifted on this. People don't want to see it pop up at different events and carnivals and state fairs, wherever they live. And so we're just so proud that we were able to get this finally across the finish line.
Okay, and congratulations for your role in that, Mark, as you have played in many, many things that have happened that are good for animals in this state, including no dogs or cats sold at pet stores. At least I thought so. So you know that I worked very hard. You worked very hard. So many did for Chicago and for the state of Illinois, that no dogs or cats can be sold at pet stores. So I think we start here. Why am I saying this with such adamance? Is that even a word? Why am I saying this so adamantly? How's that? Because I feel so strongly about it. I know you do too. Why is this important?
We all feel strongly about this, Steve, and it's been one of the biggest frustrations I've had in my almost 11 years of being the state director in Illinois and the lobbyist for Humane World. We have been trying, and we've been focused so hard on ending the puppy mill to pet store pipeline, not only in Illinois, but across the United States. And we've fought so hard on this issue, and we've passed over 20 local ordinances. Many of those were showcased, I believe, on your radio show that we talked about Naperville and other cities that passed historic ordinances in their towns where they didn't want to see the public buying from known puppy mill operators. And those 20-some ordinances then snowballed into a state law that passed. Our House sponsor was a Republican. Our Senate sponsor was a Democrat. We worked together in a bipartisan way to say no more puppies to be sold in Illinois pet stores. We passed the law in 2021. Again, super majorities in both chambers. The governor did a public ceremony signing the bill and talking about the merits of the bill, all to find out that these stores got their lawyers together and found a way around the enforcement.
Now, that's where I'm going to stop you, mostly because I have to break for commercials. But how the heck can that happen? We'll find out when we come back, and we'll find out where we are now with all of this. Can dogs and cats still be sold at pet stores today in Illinois? We'll learn the answer on WGN with Mark Ayers. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Mark Ayers is the Illinois director for the Humane World for Animals, formerly known as the Humane Society of the United States. Just rebranded, same organization. But boy, oh boy, this is crazy. You pass a law, you have lawyers look at this legislation, you have all of these legislators, many of whom themselves are attorneys, look at this legislation, you figure it's ironclad, and for a good reason. And I don't know that we explained that reason appropriately. We talked about it earlier in the show a bit, Mark, with Dr. Nancy Kay, who authored a book called A Dog Named 647, that the issue isn't the pet stores themselves. It's the idea these pet stores are selling animals and where they are sourced from. Can you talk about that?
That's right. So in 2021, Illinois was the fifth state in the country to prohibit the sale, the commercial sale of dogs and cats in pet shops. These are pet shop operators, which is a license that is actually issued by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. And so as soon as the governor signed that law, we all celebrated, rightfully so. We thought we just did something incredible, not just for pets, but for consumers who would then buy those pets at triple-digit interest rates, predatory interest rates, and then got a sick puppy to boot, which was miraculously not covered by the warranty in the store.
I know you're on a roll, but I want to add to that. Oftentimes the dogs that are sold there are identified as whatever breed. It could be a peek-a-poo or whatever. And it's not really what they say it is, which is technically consumer fraud. In addition to that, you touched on it. These dogs are likely to be physically unhealthy, at least more likely than a dog gotten elsewhere, but also mentally unhealthy, too. These dogs are more likely to have behavior problems, which can be significant, which include house training, if nothing else, because they're forced in these little places. They're not taken for walks. So these dogs are forced to do number one and number two where they are, which is inhumane, one can argue as well. But the biggest thing of all is where they're sourced from. They're greatly from puppy mills, are they not?
That is correct, Steve, and I've heard it. You say it many times before on your show. A reputable breeder would never, ever, 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 ever sell to a pet store. I think those are your direct words, if I don't remember correctly.
They are, yes,
And it's so true. They would never sell to a pet. They want to know who is buying my pet. What kind of home do they have? Where do they live? Do they have other pets? They ask a number of questions to ensure that this animal is the right fit for you. And you are the right fit for that animal. What happens inside of these stores is basically nothing. If you've got the cash, you've got a credit card, the animal is yours, no questions asked. And they're coming from known puppy mills. But what's even more sickening, Steve, is that these stores are back open again today using a licensing scheme to keep those doors open and to keep that supply of puppy mill puppies in Illinois turned on under a scheme that they're taking part in as we speak.
Now, how can they do that legally?
In 2021, the law that passed applied to a pet shop operator. That is the license that is issued by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. What these pet shop operators did was they voluntarily surrendered that license back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture and then obtained a completely different license called a dog dealer license. And so a dog dealer in statute was just someone that would breed and sell dogs out of their home, not a commercial retail establishment like a pet shop operator is. And as we all know, these stores are operating in commercial retail establishments inside of shopping malls and strip malls. And so historically, ag would give you a pet shop operator license if you were wanting to sell dogs inside of a commercial retail establishment. But if you were in your home and selling puppies for the public, they would give you a dog dealer license. However, this at retail to the public delineation is not in statute. And so what these pet shop operators did was they just, if we're calling ourselves dog dealers, There's nothing in statute that says we can't sell at retail to the public. And so they took it to court. An administrative law judge basically ruled in their favor. And they're all still open right now as we speak. And we've been trying to close that loophole ever since 2021. But the pet shop operators and the puppy mill lobbyists have hired numerous lobbying firms to kill that effort. And they've done so, unfortunately, every year since 2021. And so we'll try again in 2027 to hopefully get this across the finish line to the Illinois General Assembly and shut these folks down once and for all.
Well, it's clear the general public either doesn't know when they're going, you know, to these pet stores, and that the pet stores are doing this workaround. So my question is, what can we do about it? Maybe not today. We have to wait till session starts again. But can, at that point in time, people make a difference by contacting their state representative or state senator?
They absolutely can, Steve. And in fact, the bill that closed that licensing scheme is actually still active in the General Assembly. And I'm hearing that the General Assembly might be coming back into session sometime this summer and again in the fall for some legislative cleanup on data centers and other things. And so it's feasible that they could come back and close this loophole. And so if they want to talk to their state senator or their state rep, I would encourage them to make that contact and ask them to pass and co-sponsor Senate Bill 2990, which effectively closes this licensing scheme down once and for all. So contact your rep and senator, ask them to support and co-sponsor SB 2990.
That's Senate Bill 2990. And the idea would be not to do anything all that dramatic, just close a loophole for what was already overwhelmingly voted for in both sides, the Senate and the House. But what's more is what the general public truly does want to see happen.
Overwhelmingly in support of it, Illinois residents were, Steve. It was supermajorities in both chambers. And in fact, this bill, I don't even view it as substantive. It's a minor fix to a underlying law. And all it simply does is it allows the Illinois Department of Agriculture to enforce a law that was already passed in 2021. It's one sentence long, not even. And so we just need that in statute to effectively close these bad operators down once and for all.
All right. Once that is passed, how is this enforced? Will it be?
I have no problem that it will be enforced well by the Illinois Department of Ag. In fact, the IDOA was the one that gave us the language and said, we need this to pass so that we can enforce a law that you passed in 2021. It's a very clear sentence, and it will effectively close this entire thing down. And so that's all. The only thing that's standing in the way is one sentence. And I think we'll be successful in 2027 when a new General Assembly is likely sworn in, and we'll start fresh then. And hopefully that'll be the year that we get this enacted into state law.
Well, you know, if I can help, I will. Mark Ayers, Humane World for Animals, Illinois Director for State of Illinois, thank you for everything you do.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Congressman Ted Lieu of California introduced the Keeping Pets and Families Together Act. This is legislation that would establish a grant program within the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help animal shelters microchip dogs and cats before they are adopted or transferred. Why is this important? Well, according to American Humane, about 10 million dogs and cats are lost or stolen every year. Now, what's wrong with a collar on a cat that goes outside? And I don't want cats to go outside, but a collar or on a dog with information on the dog tag, but those can fall off. Or what happens over the course of years? Hopefully your dog lives long enough and you can't even read what's on there anymore after 10 years or so of the dog in water, swimming with the collar on and going through all kind of weather and such. You can't even read it anymore. Or it's taken off if the pet is stolen. Permanent identification, that's what a microchip is. It's about the size of a grain of rice. It's a chip. It's implanted beneath the skin by a veterinarian, a private veterinarian or a vet at an animal shelter. The idea is then a scanner can read the information. So you can scan the microchip with a scanner. By the way, one is available at just about any animal shelter, including animal control, for you, for anyone to go up there and use the scanner if you'd like. It's just there. It's available for anyone. Some police stations have them. Most veterinary clinics have them. But they don't do any good if the pet isn't registered. So while I support this bill, and I think it's the most, it's great, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's all about, I mean, imagine how many animals, we don't even know the number for sure, of animals that are lost. I mean, it's in the millions that end up at a shelter. And if the information on the microchip was correct, if they were microchipped in the first place, then that animal could be found. I mean, you'd be able to find the person who has the animal. But that's unfortunately not the case because people don't register the microchip. They don't register their name, their phone number, their snail mail address, their email address. They need to do that. But what's more, what you need to do, and this is the big thing, if you move, people forget, okay, I've got to change it with the post office. I've got to let this person know, that person. But you also have to change it with your microchip provider because otherwise, scan the chip and it's old information. It's outdated and that shelter cannot find you. So that lost pet is never brought back to you. It doesn't need to be that way. It's like having a telephone without a telephone number, and that's not helpful. We don't want this to happen in Chicago. It happened in L.A., an outbreak of leptospirosis, and that caused a problem. I mean, at some point in time, over 200 dogs were impacted, and at least, likely more, than 6 dogs succumbed of leptospirosis. Now, first of all, vaccinate. Leptospirosis is now a core vaccine. It is spread by multitude of animals, but at the top of the list are urban rats, those city rats. And what the rats do is they are infected and they piddle in the puddle or any body of water, large or small, and the dog walks in that water and licks paws or drinks some of the water. And now that dog may get leptospirosis, which, by the way, you can actually get from your dog. So again, I'm going to back up to talk about prevention. That is the most important word. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.